Hello, everyone, and welcome to Padawan Unlimited. I'm your host, Gil, and today I'm excited to bring back someone who I had last during the last set, Zach, aka Getsu. How you doing, brother?
Doing good. Glad to be here again.
Yeah. So, just as a recap for anyone who might be new to the channel or to the podcast, Zach is a very accomplished already Swoo player. Last set during set two during those PQs, he topped eight, and then I think the next week he got a top four with an off relatively off meta deck, but it was Boba Blue, I think that's what it was, right?
I miss it. Yes.
Yeah, and I think he was like really close to getting the championship, and then he cl this season. So I'm going to speak all your praises. This season, he helped create the McClunky Gaming team. A combination of a couple different teams into one bigger organization, working with Titan 1K in the McClunky Gaming group. But also, he has several top eights already. He just got a top a PQ championship last week, and then you're about to do the final PQ and Red Caps corner. So you really hit the ground running set after set, and you're getting a lot of accolades, I'll say. How does it feel, by the way?
I'm definitely having fun playing the game. I originally wanted to approach this casually and just play at weekly events,
Yeah.
but I have a very competitive mindset and it kind of just roped me in.
Yeah.
And now I just keep going to more and more events. I wasn't sure about Worlds, but now that I have the day one bye, I guess I'm going to be doing that as well.
We're gonna get you that sponsorship. That's gonna happen because I mean I'm serious because you have, like I said, you have a lot of accomplishments. McClunky Gaming, the group that you helped kind of organize, has a lot of winners, I'll say, within the team. If not winners, they're high quality players. So actually, the reason I'm so happy you're here today, and for everyone who's listening, we're gonna talk about coaching, and Swoo fundamentals. And how to get to that next level, because here at Padawan Unlimited, we have our like thing. We're kind of like the casual tryhards, and a lot of us, and I know me specifically, want to get to the next level. And for everyone out there who's also listening or watching the YouTube channel, I one of the things that really gravitated me, one of the reasons I gravitated towards McClunky Gaming and Zach specifically, or Getsu specifically, is because he had a lot of good insights in the game. I remember specifically one of the first store showdowns in New Jersey, watching him and another person who's actually on the team, Tyler, like just playing, and they knew the mechanics. They always were kind of winning. They were always really good. And now that I've gotten to know Zach a little bit more, I know that even just casually talking to him about analysis within the game has really upped my performance to the point where I got, top 16 with an off-meta Obi-Wan ECL deck at one of the PQs. And I think that's just a testament to the quality of player within the McClunky Gaming team, as well as yourself, Zach. So we have a lot to talk about. So, and we had our first coaching session, I think last one or official coaching sessions about like a week or two ago. And I really just want to ask you, so what's your, like, your general, I know you might be new to this, but what's your general approach to coaching so far?
I'm still putting that together. I definitely want to take a more holistic view, not just looking at the game itself, but looking at the temperament of the player, the out-of-game habits, specifically regarding sleep and eating and preparation for events. I think making sure somebody is getting adequate sleep before an event is extremely important, something that I I'm guilty of not doing very frequently. I will go to events on 3 hours of sleep because I am a night owl and doesn't
Yeah.
work well for optimal play. And beyond the out of game stuff, I want to work from where the player's at and then go up from there. So do a session where we establish where they're at the game, how good their fundamentals are, their general gameplay is, what level they're at. And then work like climbing up a ladder, just going next rung, next rung, next rung until they get to wherever they want to be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think also just mechanically speaking, so anyone who's, for everyone out there, like in my experience with our first coaching session, I thought that was really great because, you didn't even talk about the game at first. Like you said, you're trying to have a holistic approach. You asked, like, hey, are you sleeping? Your stress levels, right? Are you hydrating, getting water? And then you gave advice, like actual good, like good advice in terms of take a second to meditate, you know, to get in the zone kind of thing. So I definitely see how you've kind of already started to apply that within your coaching. And I think it does equate to performance. I mean, you know, you do it, you helped me kind of do that, and you're obviously way better in the game than me at this point. But you know, I'll get there one day. Yeah, so when you go into once you get outside of the, you know, that out of game approach, the out of game stuff, and you start talking about in game, what are some of the things that you think are like, or how do I phrase this? What are some things that you find are important for players to know about gameplay, deck building, whatever that might be?
One of the most common phrases that plays in my head a lot when I'm thinking about coaching, I think it's common knowledge, but maybe it's not, identifying whether you're the aggro or the control deck, not just in general, but at any given stage of the game. Always asking yourself, am I supposed to go face here? Am I the one that's supposed to be pushing damage? Am I the one that's supposed to be controlling the board? I think that is at the very base level, the first thing that players need to work on. And then they have to approach from there. I think very close to that is also the resourcing decision for this game specifically. So the first question of, am I the control? Am I the beatdown? Is something that applies to not just card games, but other games. Like a game that comes to mind is like League of Legends. Like, are you going aggro? Are you the player that is trying to put on pressure? Although there's much more of an ebb and flow in that game, it applies in a much broader sense. Specifically to this game, I think the most important thing is resourcing. In card games in general, you want to look for a curve, but in this game, you get to create your curve in a way or tailor your curve. You are stuck with whatever cards you have drawn, but from those cards, you are creating your plays. It's not as simple as you have these six cards, you're playing with these six cards. It's you have this these six cards, you're resourcing two of them. You have another two cards, you're resourcing one of them. And that mechanic is probably the most crucial to this game specifically, and one that I think players will need to work on the most to maximize their play.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. In our first coaching session, and you saw my hands, and you when you were like coaching me on what to talk or what to do. I found myself really surprised that even if I thought I was the aggro, there were times where instead of just hitting the base, you told me just to take initiative, right? And in my head, I'm like, if I'm aggro, I'm just hitting the base, it regardless of what else is out there, right? But there's a lot of times actually where you need to take a step back. You are still aggro, but to optimize the most amount of damage, you should probably take a step back and claim. And then let the person do whatever they want. So I think what you're saying is like really, really important. Really, definitely really important because I'm still figuring that out in terms of what's the next level after just basic understanding, aggro hit base or control, like make sure you have a good board state. Before even, I guess before we even get further into that, right? Before we get into like resourcing decisions and aggro versus control, you know, fundamentally before that, you even or mechanically before that, you need a deck, right? You need to build something. And what I find fascinating is that you built this kind of off meta deck. Not CAD is not your deck that you won the PQ with 2 weeks ago, was CAD green, not ECL. It was a 30-point base with CAD. CAD is like in the meta a little bit right now, but still a little off because with the green combination specifically. Or the command that's new, and I remember you built it. You took you for like after like a week, you trialed it out. You took like a top eight or something, and then like 2 weeks later, you took a PQ. So I mean, you built a deck that had I guess had really good fundamentals. And before you even get to resourcing, you need to have the cards in hand. When you're building a deck, and maybe if you're trying to coach someone on what to build a deck, what kind of things are you looking for when you're trying to build something? Like, what are your considerations when you're putting cards together?
I think before answering that question, there is a step that players not, I can answer it for me, but
Sure.
players, I would recommend for them to first become acquainted with making decisions in deck slots for meta decks if they have a deck that they're playing a lot, for example, in Han Yellow, and approaching it as how do I maximize this deck against the current meta? One of the classic examples from this past set was the Rebel package versus the Good Stuff package. Where do you want the good stuff? Where do you want the Rebels? And the Rebels being very good in the mirror, and the Good Stuff being very good as a general approach, where one is more specialized, I'm going to target these decks, and the Good Stuff is I'm approaching the game against many different decks. Another example from Han Yellow would be the addition of the 7-drop Enfys, where they found that they were losing points into Jango, and Jango's a very big part of the meta, and it's approaching the deck as what card can I add to this meta deck to gain me points against Jango? And that was the 7-drop Enfys, where they can just keep chain bouncing the Ruthless primarily, but any unit they could just attack in as first action and always bounce. Beyond that, the way I try to approach the game, I don't like playing meta. I think that there is a lot to be gained from playing meta and be very good at mastering a already established deck and be very good at optimizing that deck. I think that's actually the correct way to approach a game in general. I always think back to this saying from a League of Legends pro called Apto that has stuck with me since I heard it many, many years ago, where he talks about innovation versus optimization.
Okay.
And he was known, for those that play League, he was known for his Twisted Fate mid lane, being a Twisted Fate mid laner and being a very good Twisted Fate player, the best in the world.
Yeah.
He would say, and he was always praised as inventing the style. He would always say, I didn't invent the style. This was something I saw somebody else do. He did it, and this other person did it very well. And then he took it and he optimized it. He didn't look to innovate anything. Innovating is very hard. It normally fails. You have to spend a lot of time failing to be the person that innovates something new. Optimization, taking something that's already good and making it better, is a lot easier. So that's the approach of, okay, this deck is good. Let me optimize it. I do prefer innovating, and that is looking at the meta as a whole, looking at where I think it's going to go, and then trying to build a deck to beat that. I think that it is most approachable at the start of a new set, but it can
Okay.
be done at any time. The start of a new set, because this is when everything's new to everyone, and we have an old guard that is definitively good, and we have a bunch of new tools to attack this old guard. It
Right.
is possible to do it at any time. We were pretty far into this set when I did end up building Cad Green. And what I did to build that deck is I looked at specifically the most played deck, Han Yellow. Well, not most played, most winning, which was winning by a wide margin. I haven't looked at the stats over the last few weeks. I imagine it's still like 25% of first or something like that, like some high number.
Yeah.
I looked at the second most winning, which is Sabine, or was at the time. And that was also by a decent margin over, I think Django was third. I imagine these stats would still be this way after like 2 or 3 weeks of me not looking at them. And I said, okay, how do I beat Han? How do I beat Sabine? And Cad felt like the right place to be with ramp. It specifically needed to be ramp because it needed to get to Syndicate Lackeys on the turn that, well, not just Cad in general, but green and yellow with ramp. Being able to play Syndicate Lackeys on turn three when Sabine flips lines up really well into that. Being able to play Syndicate Lackeys on six resources, so going down to five if Han DJs. So they steal a resource, Syndicate Lackeys then on five resource can kill the DJ and get the resource back and still stay on field.
Yeah.
That also just couples really well with the Cad ping, especially the Cad deploy. So if Cad in the Han matchup getting the Cad out before they can DJ. And then even like letting them DJ if they need to, and then just starting to chain pings. against Sabine unit like Forlom, if the field's clean from, let's say they go ground, like let's say the plays line up, they go ground, I go ground, or even they don't, and I just have McClunky and I clean the field their turn one play, turn two play on curve, and they flip Sabine, then Forlom just easily cleans up Sabine with the Cad Ping. It just lines up very well into those two decks. And then I spent, after figuring out those, I spent a lot of time playing into the other matchups, Django, Boss Green, it came up in popularity, and making sure that the deck could at least go like 50-50 or just slightly unfavored into those. It is a big time investment in terms of just innovating a new deck or building a new deck. I did have the benefit of looking at some old shells, for example, on McClunky, Austin, and Philip, number guy, and I think he
Akon.
goes by Akon, made the or were two of the pioneers of Boba Green in set two. So I had their shell to look at for Cad Green in set three. So it wasn't fully just like, okay, I'm just gonna. I started there and then went from that.
That's fascinating. The idea that innovation versus optimization, and it's really hard to innovate, which I guess fundamentally, like, basically, we should understand, like, innovating takes a lot of failure. So you had potentially a shell. You knew what you wanted to do. Your goal was, you looked at, I guess not even top eights. You looked at really like top fours and like PQ winners. And you're like, how can I attack these top decks? Because at the end of the day, like, there's a wide field. And I think we saw some variety, a lot more variety this set than the last set. But at the end of the day, what's actually winning consistently? And build the deck to that, and then you can optimize afterwards, like deck card, like maybe sideboard, I guess primarily sideboard, and maybe like five or five cards in the main deck to attack different archetypes that would prove challenging to you. And obviously, if I'm some is that am I summing that up right? Does that sound right?
Yes, and there is a second conversation to be had here where when is it right to do that compared to when is it right to attack the field in general first. I think that from a deck building standpoint, you really do have to be like, okay, what am I targeting first? Because you need somewhere to start. And then you can go out from there. But specifically for these PQ events, the only spot that matters is first. It matters getting into top eight. But if you get to top eight and you can't win top eight, it doesn't matter. The first place is the only thing that matters. For a lot of other events, it's top eight that matters. You just want to make the cut. You just want to get as high as possible, as consistently as possible. And for those events, just playing like a deck that is very consistent into the field is very good. I do think at this point, Cad Green is consistent into the field, but that's not where it started as. It started as, okay, I'm going to be able to get to top cut. I'm going to be able to do that because I am a very skilled player and I'm going to be able to build a deck that is good enough to get there. And then I'm going to be able to, I'm building a deck to spike that top cut because it's first or nothing in these events compared to if it's not first or nothing, if it's only your job to get to top eight, then all that really matters is just being good against the field. But pulling back from that a bit, ultimately, like when you do approach building a brand new deck, it does have to start somewhere. There are matchups that should be targeted, and it should probably be the most played decks in the format, or at least the most winning.
I think that's a good fundamental. I guess that's good, like, general rule or principle for anyone who is building a deck on how to approach it. Because I mean, aside from like the other idea of just having fun, like having a cheesy deck that, because I'm gonna do that for the next set. I'm gonna build a Hera deck. I'm gonna call it the Specter of Hera, and I'm gonna decide, like, I have to find the color combination that I want. I'm testing two different color combinations at this point. See if we can get that competitive enough. Okay, so covered.
Do we have a
That's a
lot of new specters?
Oh yes, we
Yeah.
do. I'm
Yes,
super
you do.
excited. Now it's a decision, like, do I want to go like double green or like red? And when we do group team testing, I'm gonna start throwing some wild decks at you guys to see what sticks. Because I'm actually going to Milan for the qualifiers there at the end of March. It's one of the first ones that's gonna be played, and so I have a month to prepare for that, or month and a half. And this is why I think it's very important for anyone out there. If you're doing competitive or not competitive, like, if you want to get better, listen to those. You should listen to the advice of those that have more experience and wisdom, because it'll play out really well. So, so we covered deck building. We started tar we but before that, we started talking about resourcing, aggro, control. The idea of aggro versus control, I mean. And so we'll pivot into resourcing decisions for a couple minutes, because I think, like you said, that's really important. I know I still have trouble with that. Like, fundamentally for me, I'm always trying to find a curve. Like, if does my starting hand allow me to play something for the first two, three rounds? If not, I generally mulligan. Sometimes I actually find, even if I have a one and a like a two cost and a four cost and no three, I risk it for the biscuit and still mulligan again. And then when I'm playing them, I'm generally resourcing, or maybe not me, but also a lot of like newer players will probably just resource the thing they can't pay for, right? Like the Lukes on turn three, or Devastator on turn four, and they might not save it. I know like other players do, like more skilled players do that. So I guess my question is, when you are after you res after you're doing your resourcing for the first round, first turn, what goes through your mind at a high level when you're going throughout the game on which cards that you're drawing to resource? Like, what's generally going on through your head?
I think that first starts at the mulligan,
Okay.
and the mulligan is going to be based on what cards specifically I'm looking for in that matchup. And then that continues to what cards, like whenever I'm drawing cards off the top. And your example of most players would just resource the Luke if they have it early, which from the simplest level, you're newer to the game, or maybe even intermediate, is correct. From a very high level, it is not. There are certain cards that will need to be held onto in certain matchups. You need to have this at this certain interval. There are duplicates. So, three Lukes in a deck, that's a seven drop. There is a good chance that you can resource it on the early turn and it can come later. It gets a little more critical when it's something like a five drop, like for example, with the Syndicate Lackeys in the Cad Green deck, where these are just cards that need to be held onto and can't be resourced.
Okay.
I think with those later cards, it is the most skill expressive when somebody is like does identify like this card I need to hold onto. I need to be playing this on seven resources to have a chance in this matchup. I remember when I first started in this game and I was learning about the other players playing it, Ophir Wu was praised by a lot of the other top players by being able to correctly identify, and no matter what deck he's playing, what high cost card, if he has it in his starting hand, he has to hold on to, he has to figure out how to navigate to, and by doing so, he wins the matchup.
Okay.
The issue with that being, you hold on to that Luke, and then you draw two more top end cards after that. And now all of a sudden you don't have a turn two play, a turn three play, like whatever spot in your curve you were missing and you're hoping to draw it off the top. If it's not there, there has to be a plan in place already to some extent to be able to get past that and know that you can get past that. Because if you can't, then it is always the right decision to just research it, resource it. So
Yeah, it's like StarCraft right now. No, I hear you, because I think one of the things that I think about, even go like tying the themes together of deck building and then resourcing decisions, right? Where on your curve, or what is how many cards do you have of any specific resource value? So like, if like for example, like I play a lot of three drops in the Obi-Wan deck, so I know that I can resource, or I can probably hold a high card in my first hand, because I'm going to probably draw, half my deck is twos and threes, so I have statistic I like at least this is in my head, like statistically I have a chance of getting, I can top deck a card I can actually play, which is not necessarily possible in a lot of other decks if you don't stick to specific ratios. For building your deck.
yes, so that is on a high level how you can approach it, but also have to always keep in mind what kind of deck am I going against? How quick of a clock are they going to put on me? If I do keep this card and I miss this turn, am I just dead? And that
Right.
is a mistake I actually made at a recent PQ where I kept a Maul in my starting hand because I really wanted to deal with a Quinlan flip, and it could have been a Maul or a Cloud Rider. Both of them were suboptimal for my starting hand, and I resourced the Cloud Rider and kept the Maul, and then on turn 2 and turn 3 I didn't have a play. So, I mean that was also just because I had a very high costed hand. I don't remember exactly. I think it was like Maul. I think I had the ramp and he sparked the ramp. It was something like that. I'm trying to remember how exactly it got to that situation. But I had
Right.
a turn 1 play, Cloud Rider, Maul, ramp, and then forget the other two cards. But I ended up in a situation where if I had resourced the Maul and kept the Cloud Rider, I would have been able to interact with my opponent
Okay.
on turn 2 and turn 3, but because I didn't, I had no way to interact with them, and it ended up costing me the game. Quinlan is obviously has the potential to be a very fast deck. Quinlan Tarkintown. Also have to keep in mind that they can have Spark in their opening hand when it's Heroic Cunning. It was a very big mistake on my part to be like,
Right.
okay, I'm gonna keep this Maul to try to kill the Quinlan on flip after ramping or looking for another or two or something of that, because then I don't even have all the pieces there. I think I had the ramp in the Maul, but that still doesn't line up exactly with Quinlan flip. It does the turn after, but they could do something like Spark
Yeah,
and
which
then just completely disrupt that.
that's a really good point, and I think. So that analysis is that next level. I'm not, sometimes I don't even think about, all these other components. And so what is your opponent trying to achieve with their turn? So like when you're making a resource decision and you look at across the table, if it, like you said, if it's a red hair, if it's a red, yellow or any yellow heroism that can potentially spark your hand for turn one or turn two, and in your hand you have maybe potentially multiple choices of like lower cost units, you should maybe you should, it would probably be wise to keep them, right? And even though you want the late game play with the seven drop, resource it, make sure you have two different plays, so that if you get sparked or something like that, or they do hand disruption, you can actually still do something with the game. That has happened to me a lot too with against Quinlan specifically, so I can definitely feel your pain there.
Yeah, it's something that, especially with Bazine, after Bazine came out for Villainy, like Bazine, then Cunning Villainy and Cunning Heroism have potential turn one, look at your hand, discard something. Just being aware of that is very important.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about some resourcing, and I'm not going to go too much into it because that can be an entire hour long conversation of, and it really depends on essentially depends on what decks are being played. I want to just go, the last thing I want to talk about actually is that where can people find you? Right. And because we've been talking about some coaching, and I feel like you've already given up me and probably, and I believe the audience like a lot of information. If they want more, right, and be, they want to up their game, but they also don't necessarily want to get it from like KTOD or something like that, how can people find you?
I am always reachable on Discord. If you are in KTOD, McClunky, the main Star Wars Discord, if you type in Getsu, you should be able to find me easily. I am curious if McClunky, if it's typed into Google, if our Discord comes up, which it does. So if you just type in McClunky Discord on Google, there's a link tree to all of McClunky's links, and we have our Discord on there. So you can always find me through the McClunky Discord.
Okay. And for anyone who does, we spell McClunky a little bit differently. So it's
That's a good point.
MacLunky. Okay. So MAC, like mac and cheese, like Mac, LunkY, McClunky Gaming. And that's where you can find the team and Getsu. But you're also starting to do, you're actually starting to open up coaching services outside of the team, essentially, right?
Yes, I will be doing that through the McClunky Discord. I have an email that I have set up called Gets. I think it's Getsu. Yeah, it's getsucoaching@gmail.com. There is a chance that I just do everything through the McClunky Discord. The details on that aren't released yet. It will be within the next few weeks. There It might not start till after the Bot the Network event in late March, just because that will be the focus of the team for now.
Yeah.
But it will be posted for booking within the next couple weeks. In terms of availability, it's going to be pretty limited. I don't have, I still have school and other stuff to do, so I'm not going to be able to take on everyone.
Yeah.
I will be post the way I'm going to handle it is people that are interested can go on to some type of contact list, either via email or maybe via Discord, and then I will send out my schedule for booking. I am also going to offer package, and then it'll be first come first serve for that. I'm also going to offer packages where it's like you can book me for a month, and like you want to do, I'm looking at maybe like $30 for 30 minutes and $60 for an hour at least to start, and you can book me like four sessions for a month, and then you get priority on my weekly availability, and then like probably like a couple larger packages, which will only be one or two people each. And that'll
Yeah.
be way more availability where I will be engaging, in multiple hour sessions a week potentially.
Yeah. Okay. No, appreciate it. I know that we're I know McClunky is still working out through some of the details on how to execute, but I'm just so excited to get that out there because I've been the recipient of some of this coaching, and also just being a member of the team, and it's really helped me. And for those who want to become more competitive, I'm again. You could be a collect if you're a collector, and this doesn't matter to you, don't pay attention to this. But if you want to be a little bit more competitive, you want to start winning some store showdowns because potentially top eight some PQs or even win a PQ, it all you all got to start somewhere. And so I'm just excited to share that information with everyone in the community. And so I'll also post the Discord link in the comments or the description for this episode or this video so that people can get into the McClunky Gaming server. It is a growing community, and I think one of the things that they really focus on, it's really quality over quantity. I think that's for me like the biggest thing I will say, because although we don't necessarily have like 1,000 people in there, those who do participate and do contribute relatively high quality like effort in insight stuff like that. So when it comes to even the coaching, like you said, it's limited. It's not like it's going to be 30 50 people. It's going to be like, hey, this is you're going to be dedicated essentially to this person or these individuals.
Yeah,
And
it's going to be very few.
yeah, and I think also it's not just you who's coaching. There's going to be other members of the team who I think are going to be involved. I'm not going to spoil their names or whatever, but everyone has kind of a
Yes.
specialty in gameplay, and they're all top performers. Like they've either won or top four or top aided large competitions. And I'm talking like
So,
SCG Con, PQ. I don't know if I'm allowed to. I didn't want to just share that out there without
no,
any.
you're good. You're good.
So.
I was going to go into that a little bit more myself. We'll be offering people that specialize in certain decks that have been consistently top eighting, have won or top four or done really well at PQs, SCG cons, larger events for general coaching, but also we're going to be listing our deck specializations. Like these are the decks that we've played a lot and know very well. So if you're looking for somebody that's like very good at Django, very good at Han, yellow or green, very good at Bosque Blue, very good at Cad Green in my case, or Bosque Blue in my case, then we will have that person available for coaching. This will be a consistent top eight or higher level player. As
Yeah.
long we're not, we haven't fully determined who's doing it yet, but it does sound like a lot of the top eight players are interested. So we probably will have most of the decks covered.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, and I see I started to see some of that planning. So again, I'm just super excited to kind of share that information because getting on the ground level with like a team like this is always really cool. At least for me. Since it's my first TCG, so I'm super excited about it. Okay. Well, with that, Zach Getsu, I really appreciate your time today. This was really insightful, in just me, Mr. Miyagi-ing me so that I can understand what's going on. I really appreciate it. I hope everyone else out there who's been listening learned something as well. And again, I'm going to post some additional information in the description of this video. So if you ever need to reach out to any of these folks on or join the McClunky Gaming Team Discord, it is free. You don't have to pay to get in. Feel free to do so. And with that, until next time, may the force be with you.
Thank you for having me, Gil. I also just wanted to add one last thing. You can
Sure.
find me on YouTube at Gets Who Plays CGs. So, like my name, plays, and then CG. I don't upload too much. I will probably be uploading a little bit more going into set four.
Okay.
And I may be posting recordings of coaching sessions there as well.
Awesome. You know what? I'll also put your YouTube link in the description as well. So, okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. No, of course. And until next time, may the force be with you.